outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. You simply pour a can into your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. So pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Welcome to the Wired to Hunt podcast, your home for deer hunting news, stories, and strategies. And now, your host, Mark Kenyon.
Welcome to the Wired to Hunt podcast. I'm your host, Mark Kenyon, and this is episode number 133. Today on the show, Dan and I are covering a whole variety of topics. We talk late season hunting, tips for specifically targeting does, the complicated decision of choosing to shoot or pass a deer, and much, much more. Welcome to the Wired to Hunt podcast, brought to you by Sitka Gear. And today on the show, it's just me and my co-host, Dan Johnson, and we're going to be talking about a whole bunch of different things. Potentially, we could talk about late-season deer hunting. We may be talking about hunting does. We're going to be talking about hunting for one specific buck. We're going to be talking about my newest nickname and probably a whole lot more. So, Dan, we're shooting from the hip today. There's a couple ideas for me. What do you want to talk about?
Monster trucks, sandwiches.
I like that.
These are just two things that I don't know why, but when you asked me, those were the first two things that popped into my head. So if we could maybe incorporate those together, that might even be like eating a sandwich while watching monster trucks. I don't know.
I'd love to psychoanalyze why those were the two things that popped up first in your mind, like what that might mean about you.
Or we could just stick to hunting. That's fine with me too.
Yeah. I want to start with sandwiches. Because last night I had a really good sandwich. We were going to make this kind of Belgian stew. It's called a carbonade. But the roast I took out, the venison roast I took out, ended up not having nearly as much meat as we thought, and so we didn't really have enough to make a really big stew. So I just took that meat instead and then sliced up into small pieces and sauteed that in the cast iron pan with some onions. And then I have these little like frozen French loaves that are about the size of like a sub bun, maybe, maybe like 6-7 inches long. And I baked one of those in the oven, split that down the middle, laid out this fried venison steak and onions, melted two slices of Munster cheese over top, and then I made a sriracha mayo combo and slathered that on one side, and it was an epic sandwich.
Nice. I do really the same good. Thing similar with my canned deer meat. My mom canned my buck. 100% of my buck went into – well, I shouldn't say 100. We cut the ribs out. We cut the back straps out. I saved a couple steaks or roasts, but the rest of it was canned. We cubed almost all of it and canned it.
Really?
And then she pressure cooks it. Oh, it is ridiculously tender. Warm it up in a saute, you know, saute it with some barbecue sauce and, you know, whatever extra spices that you want to add in there. And then kind of the same thing, but just with bread, toast some bread, that mixture of the deer meat goes on there, some cheese, and you got yourself a deer meat sandwich.
Wow. Interesting.
It's ridiculously good. So if anybody's out there ever thinking about canning deer meat, do it.
Do you do anything else other than use it for sandwich meat and stuff? I mean, can you take that and use it for stew meat or for
stew meat? Else? Anything. Tacos, enchiladas. Let's see, what else do we do with it? Just eat it, you know, right out of the can and slice it cold with no, and you know, put it in a piece of white bread. I mean, anything. You can do anything with it.
Huh. I've never had canned venison.
It's so tender. Yeah. Well, if you come to Iowa to shed hunt, I'll bring some over.
That'd be sweet. I want to try it. I've heard people say good things about it, but I had no idea that you guys did that.
Yep.
Very interesting.
And I like doing it that way because my wife actually eats it that way. You know?
Ah, yes.
So put a bouillon, when you're canning it, you put a bouillon cube into the jar with the meat and some extra like salt and pepper and onion powder and some garlic powder and stuff. And then, you know, you get her all ready, can it and let it set, let it seal. And then you can, it doesn't take up any freezer space, so it could just sit in your cupboard.
Yeah, that's nice. Speaking of bouillon, I'm actually going to start trying to shoot a couple does here in the next, it could be tomorrow. If not that, then it'll probably be after Christmas. But here in the next week and a half, I'm going to shoot a couple does. And one of the things I want to do is I'm going to butcher those myself, and I want to make venison stock. We've never made our own stock before. I'm going to try to make that so that instead of using beef broth or whatever in the future, we'll just have our own homemade venison stock. So I'm kind of pumped about that.
Yeah. And by the way, my stepdad just earlier this year when I was down for a weekend of hunting cooked on a Saturday, 8 hours in the oven, a side of deer ribs. Not a lot of meat, but the meat that's on there, oh my Lord. Amazing.
Really?
You know how sometimes you can tell, hey, this is deer meat because it has a little bit extra gaminess to it. You know, and I say gaminess to those people who may not like deer meat.
Right.
They say it's really gamey. I don't think it's that gamey, but it's ridiculous.
So how do you go about doing that? Because I've always heard the issue is that there's not a lot of fat on the ribs and it's just very little meat too. So it's just like tough and not much to work with. But I do know some people can, I've heard of people doing it well.
Yeah. He puts on a really nice rub and then he puts it in the oven and then he puts tinfoil over top of it. So the moisture that's in there is sealed and it just kind of recirculates back into the meat and out. And it turns out really good. Like hunter gatherer cook guy, what's his name?
Hank Shaw
says, you know, if you cook the shit out of stuff long enough, it's going to get tender. So that's exactly what he did with it. And my buck ribs are, I'm looking forward to cooking those because there's a lot of meat on that guy's ribs.
That's cool. A lot of guys don't even save the rib meat. Either they just scrap it or they throw it in the grind pile and grind up some of it. But that's interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah.
So did you just save each side or did you split it in two and have four chunks or what'd you do?
Well, we saved each side, so it's two big chunks. But when we go to cook it, we'll cut it in half and either cut it in half or try to find a pan big enough to put all of them in at one time. You can typically only fit one in an oven at a time, I guess, but you know, depending on how big your oven is.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, this has got me even more excited because I've been at this time of year, every year I usually have shifted from, not always, but usually I've shifted from targeting mature buck and usually it's just food time. So I'm excited to get a couple does down and to go through that whole process of breaking them down myself. And that's a lot of fun. Like I always find that for whatever reason, usually in October or November, I'm so busy with all the hunts and everything that I always feel rushed and I don't have enough time to like enjoy the process of processing my own deer. But now it's like, I'm able to take a deep breath and like you go into the evening knowing, okay, I'm doing one thing only and that's shooting a doe. And then tonight I'm going to be processing that doe. And like when I'm mentally prepared for it, I really enjoy that. So I'm excited to do that here soon. I might go out tomorrow night. I might do that.
It's really cool. Like, processing it is part of the whole circle for me, you know? Like, and then I just sit there with my stepdad and BS for a while, have a couple beers while we're, you know, breaking down the carcass. And then it was cool because after that, the next day, when I canned it with my mom, you know, sat there, conversation, and I don't know. It's something that at my age with my kids.
And what's that age again, Dan? Is
it... 36, dog. Oh, I ain't man. Too old.
For some I thought there was a 4 in the beginning.
I'm not that old. I'll still beat an ass or two, you know what I mean?
Yeah, at least try.
But you know, it's cool. Just the whole break, you know, I don't ever get to sit down and have conversations with those people really anymore because I'm so focused on my own family. So it's really cool to sit down and have those conversations and have that time with family members who you don't typically spend a lot of time with. You know what I mean?
Definitely. I've got something kind of like that. Like when my dad and I go up to our northern Michigan property, up to mm-hmm. deer camp or up to do some work up there, that's like one of those few times where we're in the car for, you know, 2-3 hours, usually just us. And that's like a cool excuse to just have some long talks, which is good for family, I think.
Birds and the bees, right? Is that how you learned about the birds and the bees?
Well, not, I don't know. I don't know if I remember exactly how that happened. But we do a good job of going all over the place, that's for sure already. We're talking.
What were we going to talk about today? Does or something?
Does? We're going to talk about killing does. I thought we could talk about, you know, hunting mature bucks at the late season when you've got one in particular. I thought we could talk about, I don't know. I mean, whatever.
What I want to know real quick, because I know you've wrote kind of an article about it, but for the guys who listen to the podcast, I want to talk about Holyfield a second.
Yes, we can do that. But first, we have to take a quick pause here and thank our partners at Sitka Gear for supporting this podcast and making it possible for us to have these long, strange conversations about sandwiches and deer and whatnot. And today, I wanted to give you all a quick update on Sitka's Diverge photo contest. Now, hopefully, earlier this month, you were able to vote for your favorite photos because now the contest is done and the 3 winners have been announced. And there's a winner for each of their categories, whitetail, waterfowl, and big game. And all of these photos are incredible. They're super, super cool. I'm a particularly big fan of the whitetail winner and the big game winner. So if you have a few seconds, head over to sitkagear.com/diverge to check out the winning photos and the other 27 finalists. I think you'll find them pretty interesting. Also, we need to thank our partners at Yeti for their support of Wired to Hunt. And I want to share with you one of the big reasons why I appreciate Yeti so much. Now, yes, they make a terrific product, but they also represent something that I really connect with. And, you know, more so than just their gear, it's this connection that I'm particularly interested in. And it's their focus on stories and on this community of people who live and play in the wild. That's what really separates them from other companies trying to sell you a cooler or a coffee mug, in my opinion. And I'll tell you what, if you dig into the content that Yeti is creating and putting out there, I think you'll connect in much the same way that I have. In particular, if you check out the films that have been released by Yeti this year, they are just incredible. So if you go over to their website at yeti.com or their YouTube channel, you're going to find these films, these short films, and I'd highly recommend you do it. There's so many interesting ones out there. A couple of my favorites, though, include one called Cosmo, which is about a fly fishing guide out in the Seychelles Islands, which is like visually stunning, and the music's kind of awesome, and just a cool story. And then another one called Chasing Light, which is a profile of this guy named Wyman Menzer, who's been called the Jeremiah Johnson of the Big Empty, and he was a hunter and trapper and now a wildlife photographer. And that's another one that's just fascinating and just super cool. And there's so many more like this. Lots of hunting-themed ones, fishing, outdoor-related. There's another really cool one called Incurrent about a river guide on the Grand Canyon. So check these out. I think you'll find them just as interesting as I do. And you can see all that over at yeti.com. And now, though, we can get back to the show and answer Dan's question and discuss the latest with Holyfield. Yes.
okay? And I don't want to use the term given up on him, but you've had a change of thought towards this late season hunt for Holyfield, right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's just a continuation of where we were last time when we talked about this.
Right.
And I'll bring everyone up to speed if you didn't read the article or follow what's been going on recently. But yeah, so last time we talked, it had been right towards the beginning of when I started to have this weird kind of shift in mindset with this buck. You know, he'd made it through the gun season. He made it through the rut. It was December. And all of a sudden, he showed back up. He was here. And I still can't explain exactly why the change happened, because in all the years past, you know, I've hunted single specific bucks for multiple years before, and I've still had the desire to kill them late into the year. You know, a buck a few years ago, six-shooter, I killed in mid-December. But for whatever reason, with this deer, the idea of him being around in 2017 just ended up being, for a whole bunch of different reasons, I started feeling more and more like I didn't want to shoot him now. One of those was I didn't want the hunt to end. I was just enjoying seeing this deer so much, and the idea of ending it now almost seemed like anticlimactic in my own head. Like, I already killed two bucks. I'm going to kill a few does. I've had a great season, and it was almost selfish almost. Like, I don't need to kill this deer now. And I don't know. I mean, I have a hard time still articulating all these things, but it just more and more felt like I just didn't have that drive to kill him now. So that said, you and me talked about this. I talked with some friends, you know, tried to kind of talk all of these feelings out in my head, trying to like figure out what I want to do. Part of me was feeling all these things. Another part of me was like, well, he could get killed by somebody else. He could die over the winter. Everyone thinks you're an idiot for doing this. Dan thinks you're crazy. you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, you know, a bird in the hand is better than two in the bush or whatever. So, you know, when we talked on the podcast last time, the idea I had was, well, maybe I'll leave it up to fate and I'll hunt with a bow. And if he comes within bow range, it was meant to be. If he doesn't come within bow range, it wasn't meant to be. So I went out a couple times like that. And the first two times I went out, I didn't see him. The third time I went out, I was set up, like the first two times I just sat in like an observation stand, basically. Like, I wasn't, the other thing too is these hunts when I went out there, I wasn't even like, as I'm looking back on it now, I was going through the motions. In my heart, I didn't want to kill him anymore, but I was like, I have to, I'm supposed to be out here. People expect me to be like, to do this. This is what I'm supposed to do. So I went out there with a bow, but I sat in my box blind the first two nights, which is not in a good spot to kill him with a bow. But I was like, I just want to see if I'll see him here. And so I did, and I didn't. But then the next time I went out, it was Monday, last Monday, and it was a great setup. It was these frigid temperatures had moved in. There was snow on the ground. I was over the great late season food source. I was sitting in my hay bale blind, and I was sitting out there. I was like, this could really happen. Like, there's no doubt about it. I felt like there was a very strong chance he could come into this food plot. He'd been there in daylight a few days beforehand. And I sat there holding my bow. Every deer that came out, I was like, is it going to be him? Is it going to be him? But I realized it wasn't like in October and November when I was like, you know, praying and hoping like, oh my gosh, please let it be him. Please let it be him. It was actually, please let it not be him. Every time it was a doe or some other deer, I was like, ah, okay. And when it finally got dark and the hunt was done, I was relieved. And I sat there thinking about this, and I was like, you know, just trying to process this all in my head. I'm like, why am I relieved? Like, I don't want to kill this buck now. I don't know why, but I just don't. And I was like, the logical side of my mind was trying to tell myself all the reasons why I still should, and all the voices in the behind, you know, all the voices in the whatever you call it, you know, what people are going to say, or what people would say I should do, or what I should do based on what I've been doing. But I went back in that night, and I was just sitting there in the kitchen talking with Kylie, my wife, about it. And I was like, just talking to her about how, just this, like how I don't really want to do it, but I feel like I should. And then she's like, all right, well, like, what are the reasons why you should, what are the reasons why you shouldn't. And I explained all the reasons why I didn't think I wanted to shoot him anymore. And basically it was because that's how I felt. That's what my gut was telling me. I'd had a great experience, and now I just didn't feel like I needed to kill him anymore. The reasons why I thought I should was stuff like, well, it would be good for the blog. It would be good to talk about, you know, or it would be like the right way to end this hunt, because what a bummer it'd be if I didn't end up killing him. And as I was saying these things, it made me and her like make a face. Like, I sounded like an asshole when I was saying that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's not why I hunt. I don't hunt because of what other people think, or I'm not going to kill a deer just because that's what quote unquote you should do. And so as I was saying that, I was like, this is stupid. Like, I know what my gut's telling me. I know, and this sounds all woo-woo, and I know people out there think I'm crazy, and people don't. There's people that are mad at me, Dan. I've gotten some comments and stuff. Like, people think I'm a jerk as I've tried to explain this. But that's what I felt. And I'm not going to kill a buck just to kill a buck, because it's what I'm supposed to do. If I don't have that 100% pure clarity of mind and conviction of that, I'm not going to kill an animal just because you're supposed to. So
right.
Do I want to shoot and hunt this deer someday? Yeah, I still want to hunt this deer. And if I'm fortunate enough that he's still around next year, that would be incredible. And I'm going to hunt that deer, and it's going to be awesome. But it just didn't seem like the right thing to do now. For whatever reason, now it didn't feel right. So that was last Monday, and me and Kylie talked about it. I said, I'm not going to shoot him. I'd love to, though, still see him. And I'd love to have an encounter in which, like, if I had wanted to, I could have shot him. Like, if I really was, it was like a thing for myself. Like, okay, yeah, I've chosen not to, but could I? You know, if could I put myself in a position to? So it's muzzleloader season, so I thought, all right, you know what? I'm just going to go out and I'm going to sit in my redneck blind where I think is the best chance. If I wanted to kill him with a muzzleloader, and it was during muzzleloader season, if I sat there, would I have gotten a shot? And I thought, I'll sit there. It'll be fun to watch him, and it would be fun to see the hypothetical. And so I went out last Friday, and I just sat there, and I brought my bow, actually, because I thought I might shoot a doe. But I sat there with that sitting on the ground, and I had the camera right in front of me, and my plan was just to film. I kept the windows closed. I just chilled out and just watched and kind of just enjoyed it, knowing with no pressure anymore, with no, you know, none of that. Am I going to shoot him? Am I not going to shoot him? It was just cool to be 100% confident and okay with my decision and just see what happened. And of course, right at last light, here he comes. And he came out and came into the food plot for the first time since I've been, you know, trying to see him, other than that one time with the bow when he came running through. And walked out there 65 yards. And if I had wanted to shoot him, and if I had my gun, it would have been an easy shot, and the story would have been done. And that was kind of cool. It was cool to know that if I had wanted to, I could have. But instead, I just had chose that week to watch him, and I was able to do that and get a little film. And I feel really good about it. I'm excited about it. And I'm just really stoked to find his sheds this year. Hopefully, I've never gone to a shed season so excited to try to find one deer's antlers. So that's where things stand.
Well, the cool thing about this is, to the people who maybe are upset with you, which is blows my mind that they could be angry about a decision that's not theirs, but this is just another reason why everybody hunts for different reasons, but the kill is not the most important part of the quote unquote hunt, right? It's just, I think every hunter is on a different level when it comes to, you know, when it comes, I guess, their style or their kind of hunting. And if you know, maybe they're into the, hey, I got to kill something every year, or my buddies will think I'm a bad hunter, or I'll get shit from my family or whatever. Or are they the kind of people who they go out expecting to kill and they get mad if they don't? Or if they're the kind of people who sit in a tree stand and just love nature and love observing nature. And, you know, that's not for me and you or anybody else to judge. But I do think that is, it's cool that you had a little bit of a change of heart and that you decided, you know what? I'm going to let it ride and see what happens, because you are now, in my opinion, an example I'll use a state like Michigan for an example, where a lot of hunters live by the it's brown, it's down motto, and the quality of deer are not, you know, where other states are. So now you've let a 4-year-old ride, right? If he makes it through, he's going to be 5, right?
Yeah.
So you've now walked the walk, in my opinion. You've talked the talk, and now you've walked the walk. And now, hopefully, you can be maybe an inspiration to other hunters who feel that they have to kill some kind of buck for, you know, as a status, or it means that, hey, I'm a good hunter because I killed a 4-corn or I killed a 2-year-old, you know, or, you know, whatever. You've said, you know, you don't want Michigan to be a brown it's down state. You've walked the walk now.
Yeah.
So now maybe you can allow other people to say, you know what, I might follow Mark Kenyon's lead, and I might, I might just go shoot a doe instead of killing a young buck.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, because I think one of the big things that I've taken out of this, and it's kind of related to what you said, because as I've been going through this, like, inevitably I've gotten lots of feedback from lots of people, you know, because by default, because I share so much, right, I'm putting myself up there to be judged, and people are going to let their opinions be known. And I am a human being, and so I shouldn't let it bother me, but it does sometimes. So I constantly have to tell myself, let that stuff go in one ear, out the other. But because I've been getting people telling me what I should do, or what I've chosen to do is stupid, or blah, 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 it has given me a new appreciation for the respect that I think we need to show all hunters for each of us being able to hunt your own hunt.
Right.
I think we all need to, and maybe I'm guilty of this sometimes too, I probably have looked at someone who shot a year and a half old and been like, oh, why'd you do that? Blah, blah, blah. And for what I want out of a hunt, or my goals, I would like to see fewer young deer killed. But at the same time, so-and-so, that might be what is the right hunt for him. And this was one of those examples. This experience for me put me on the other end of that, where now I was being judged for what I was choosing. And I kind of was like, whoa, like, I don't want someone telling me if I should shoot or not shoot. This is something that only I can decide. And that kind of opened my eyes a little bit to the other side of the coin too. So I think for me, the big thing I've learned is this is to shoot a deer or not shoot a deer isn't always going to be about the biology. It's not always going to be about the management. It's not always going to be about, you know, a lot of these different things. There's a whole bunch of, as we talk about so many times, there's a lot of different complicated things go into why we hunt and how we hunt and all that type of stuff. And we're each going to have our own unique take. And this is the first time for me that I've ever had this kind of unexpected kind of flip flop. So it's been just kind of a weird thing for me personally, figuring out, like, trying to understand why in my head and all that. But I feel like I made the right decision. You know, in my article, I wrote that the first blog post I put up there about when I just started considering the idea of passing him, someone left this comment. It just said, do what you won't regret. And that I kept thinking about that. And I kept trying to envision the two scenarios. So I kept thinking about, like, what would I feel like if I shot Holyfield now? Like, what would it feel about pulling that trigger and walking up on him and looking at him now? And what would the other feeling be like? What would it be if I saw him, or what would the feeling be like if I just chose not to try and kill him now? And maybe I saw him, and maybe he makes it through winter, maybe he doesn't. But what ended up making me feel worse, what ended up making me feel regret, wasn't the idea of him making it through the winter or me passing him, but him not making it through. But what felt worse now was actually the idea of shooting him, like, after not being certain about wanting to do it after all. Like, it felt like, I still can't find the right words to describe, but almost like a dishonor to kill this deer when I wasn't even like sound in my own conviction of if that was the right thing to do. Like, it just felt
right.
It started feeling wrong. When I started getting wishy-washy about it, it started feeling like it would be wrong. Like, to kill an animal just because, without being dead set certain within, like, your gut that this is the right thing to do,
right,
for me just seems like a line that shouldn't be crossed. Now, some people might think I'm getting weird and wishy-washy or woo-hoo, whatever. But, you know, I think the more we get into hunting, the more...
Who cares what they think?
Well, yeah. Yes. Agreed. But I think to something you mentioned earlier, like, a lot of us as hunters, we go through this evolution where, you know, you just want to kill a bunch of stuff. We want to kill something, and then you want to kill a bunch of stuff, and then you want to kill big stuff, and you want to prove you can do it and all these kinds of things. And I guess... I think I've been, for a while, I've been in that, like, okay, I want to kill mature bucks. And early on, it was, okay, I want to prove I can do it. And then, okay, now I want to hunt for the challenge and all these other things. And I think I'm in another slight transition now where not only does it need to be the right set of all these different criteria, but it needs to be, like, the right – I don't know, the right something. It's got to be right.
Right.
Because – I don't know. I mean, I still don't have the right words to articulate it all. All I know is that I feel good about the decision I made, and I've seen him several more times since Friday night now. I saw him last night, and it was just super cool, and I just got to sit there being like, oh, this guy, he's got to make it 10 more days, and then he's going to make it this season, and I'm going to go find those sheds, hopefully, and I'm all excited about that idea of trying to find this buck's sheds. And next year, maybe seeing him, hopefully seeing him. And I know there's no guarantees. I'm okay with that. But I'm excited again. And I'm excited about not the idea of him dead right now, but the idea of hunting him again next year. And maybe if it's meant to be, I'll, you know, put the ribbon on top. But man, it's kind of cool that after I made my decision, I hadn't checked trail cameras in a while. And I checked trail cameras just now before we got on here. And since I decided, this is so weird, since I decided that I didn't want to kill him, so since last Monday, he started showing up in daylight on my cameras almost every single day.
Kind of a big F you to your hunting strategy.
Or something. Or like he just knows. Like he's got some kind of telepathic link to my head now, and he's like, all right, Mark's not even going to try to shoot me anymore. Now I'm going to gorge myself on these brassicas. Like
he's going to be bedding in your front yard here before you know it.
Dude, before you know it, he's going to be all over the place. But he was hitting food sources on the 16th, 17th, and 18th, right in the middle of the day even. Like right. Noon, 1 o'clock. So he's comfortable and there's good food and good stuff. And, we're just going to see what happens. But some people are sick of me talking about Holyfield based on some of the comments I've gotten. So maybe I should stop. Someone that I mentioned at the beginning, I've got a new nickname. I got a comment from someone who talked about how they're, and everyone's entitled to their own opinion. This is totally fine. But he's sick and tired of my story and sick and tired of, like, my drama with this deer and how he thinks that this deer should be called Hollywood now and I should be called Miley, like Miley Cyrus. And so, you know, I don't know what to say to that. But
boy.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to know that person's reasoning for that. And I can understand. It almost feels like, you know, if I'm going to be speaking my mind here, it almost feels like I know it's not what you're doing, but it's like, hey, look at me, everybody. I've decided to pass this deer because I want to see it live. And I want to see what I can do as a hunter to expand my blah, blah, you know, whatever. That's not what you're doing. But, you know, I can see how people could perceive that as some kind of, I don't know, publicity stunt, maybe. I don't know. But I know that's not what you're doing. So, but Miley Cyrus is a pretty cool nickname for Mark Kenyon. If I have to start calling you something, I might call you Miley.
I'd rather you not, but.
Okay. All right, I won't.
There's got to be something better out there. But yeah, I don't care what people think. I've got to do what I feel is right. And I've never gone into this, you know, whether it be my writing or this podcast or anything, you know, I'm never going to change how I hunt or what I'm doing because that's what people want me to do, or because that's right. what's going to sell articles, or because that's what's going to sell whatever. If I do that, I've lost the whole reason and like the core of what I'm trying to do here. So all I'm going to ever do is I'm going to hunt and evolve as a hunter and do my own thing as I grow as a hunter and figure things out and try new things and have some success and have some failures. I'm just going to do my thing and I'm going to share what happens along the way. That's what I've always done. That's what I'm going to continue to do. And some people aren't going to like that, and that's okay. And there's other guys that, you know, they can follow. And if someone is interested in my journey, that's great too. But I'm just going to do my journey, and that's all I can do.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I mean, that's how you got to live your life. Who cares what anybody else thinks about anything, hunting or not?
Yeah. 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 I get frustrated, but I shouldn't. Like, why should I care? I shouldn't. I don't, but I do. You hear me? I sound like a crazy person.
You know, I'll be honest. I went through a period of time, and I think we discussed this on one of the previous podcasts. It's been a while, though. You know, some people get like bone envy, right? They're like, oh man, that guy shot a giant buck. Now sure. I need to shoot a giant buck, or I'm nobody, man.
Right.
That's for the birds. Right.
Oh, yeah.
And number one, you can't do that. You can't shoot. You can't do that if you're shooting fork horns. Number one. Another thing, and this is kind of spinning off into what pisses me off. And some of it has to do with social media. Some of it has to do with hunting expectations and stuff like that. You hear these people go, you know, I only hunt for the meat, but I want to be a big buck hunter. Okay. That's cool. First and foremost, I hunt for the meat. Well, if first and foremost you hunt for the meat, you should shoot the first deer that walks by your stand, regardless if that is how you're hunting. Second, if you're hunting, you know, if you want to hunt big bucks and you know, we talk about this all the time, people who bitch about, you know, not having big deer in their area, but they're part of the problem and they shoot the smaller bucks. If you want to kill something, kill a doe. In certain parts of the country, there's plenty of does out there. So you don't need to shoot a buck. Man, eat your tag every once in a while, your buck tag every once in a while. It's okay to do. I've done it. Let's see, this buck that I shot this year, in 10 years, I've shot 4 bucks. So I have eaten my tag 6 years out of those 10 years. So it's okay. If you want to fill your freezer, and I tend to be successful at that every year, shoot a doe. Sorry, I blacked out. What was I?
I think you were talking about monster trucks.
Right. Monster trucks.
No, dude, I totally hear what you're saying. And you're right. I mean, it's like it's such a messy thing because I agree with you in that if you're talking about wanting to shoot big bucks and stuff, but then you shoot a little one, well, yeah, you're part of the problem. And would I personally like to see more mature bucks? Absolutely. Would I like to see a healthier deer? Absolutely. But at the same time, I'm also, like we were talking earlier, I also don't think I should be telling so-and-so that if they really do like shooting young bucks and that is what they love, right. It's not my place to say don't do that.
Right.
So like I see both sides of the coin. It's an interesting dilemma. You look at the antler point restrictions in some states. I get a lot of questions from people saying, do you support antler point restrictions, or will you join our petition to support antler point restrictions and stuff like that? And I'm a little weird on this one because for me personally, I would like to see antler point restrictions in place in Michigan. For me, selfishly, personally, because that would mean that more young bucks would get passed. That would mean there might be some older deer. There might be better age structure. There might be bigger bucks. All things that would be great. So for me, selfishly, personally, that I like that idea. But on the other hand, do I have the right to push my own desires onto someone else? Like what about my dad, who doesn't have the desire to kill a buck, who hasn't killed a buck in for a really long time, and all of a sudden he finally gets a shot at one and he can't shoot it because I didn't want people to shoot young bucks, but it would have been his buck of a lifetime. This is all hypothetical. Right. But you know, I'm starting to like look at these things a little bit differently, and there's no clear cut answer on that kind of thing. But when it comes to that, my thought process has always been, I would rather see, and this is totally, now we're getting to specifics, but a lot of people are always asking me if I would support antler point restrictions in Michigan and all that kind of stuff. And they have antler point restrictions up in northwestern Michigan, and it's awesome. Like, I like, personally, selfishly, I like it. We're seeing more older deer, bigger deer. This is cool. And if it happened in the rest of the state, I wouldn't complain at all. Like, I personally would be happy about it. But an alternative idea would be the one buck rule. So instead of being able to kill two bucks, you can only kill one buck, but you can kill any size buck, any antler point buck. But I think that achieves both goals. On one side, if you do want to shoot the first buck you see, you can still do that. But that's your only buck tag. Now you're done. But because of that, more people would pass on younger deer because they don't want to be done. And so it would also improve the age structure. It would improve, more bucks would get passed. So it would accomplish both goals. But that's neither here nor there. But if you work for the DNR in Michigan, consider that. That's my little pitch.
You know what I also like, and I think Wisconsin did this for a while, was an earn a buck. In order to shoot a buck, you had to go and shoot a doe. People, I don't know why I like that. I don't know what kind of scientific research was done to establish that law, but I really like that.
Yeah, and yeah, personally, I think it's, I like it too. A lot of people hated it though, and still in like Minnesota and Wisconsin, like because of like the stuff I've done with the National Deer Alliance, I'm like every day I'm searching for news related to deer and deer hunting. So I'm seeing all the news articles across the country related to deer, and there's always people throwing a fit in some of those states about declining deer populations and there's too much of a doe harvest and too much of this. And so when they did have that earn a buck, that was like a big thing. People, I can't speak for everybody, but there were a lot of complaints about that being something that was driving the deer population down. But in a lot of cases, in many populations, especially 10 years ago, a lot of deer populations, from what I understand, were really overpopulated for the habitat, for what they could support. Way too many does compared to bucks, way too many deer in general. And I think the last 5 years, we've seen a little bit of a reduction across a lot of parts of the country, especially the Midwest. Right. A lot of people kind of cried bloody murder about that, but maybe it was just kind of a rebalancing. I don't know, but that's a whole interesting thing too.
You know, even in Iowa, and we don't have any point restrictions in Iowa, but I'd like to see point restrictions even in Iowa. I mean, it just, I don't know. That's, again, me, just like you, being selfish about what, you know, the quality of bucks that are in the area, you know, and it may stop someone from shooting a fork horn and shooting a doe instead to fill their freezer, which means that buck gets one more year or however many years until he, you know, ends up growing enough antlers to get shot. But I don't know. I think that's just kind of a cool way. And antler point restrictions, even in Michigan, I think some of those laws are put in to maybe for a financial reason for the state. You know, maybe if we put antler point restrictions and the bucks get bigger, we may have more out of state people wanting to come to Michigan to hunt deer. Thus, we get more money to the state.
Yeah,
which helps. So yeah,
I certainly think that going to the one buck rule in Ohio, Indiana, and Kentucky has contributed to those three states becoming so much more popular for out of staters.
Right.
So yeah, there certainly is a potential for that. It's interesting. And man, I just had something on the tip of my tongue I wanted to mention about this, and now I totally forgot. What were you just saying before? You were talking about
earn a buck. Let's see. We talked about earn a buck. We talked about antler restrictions, you know.
Oh, I know.
Okay.
Talking about young bucks, I wanted to mention a bummer thing is that of all the bucks that so even though, like you mentioned, how I could be an example for someone passing a buck and letting it go in Michigan, and yes, I am trying, hopefully having this buck make it another year, which would be great. But some other people had commented that I live in this unrealistic situation where there's mature bucks like this. No average Joe could ever pass on a buck like that. And that's not true at all. I'm not in an unrealistic situation at all. All the bucks that I passed this year have disappeared. So all the up-and-comers that I was hoping would make it, they're all dead or gone. So I'm just lucky that this one made it. Very lucky that this buck is still around, because all the other deer I was hoping would be around for next year, Foreman and Fraser and another buck I was getting pictures of, I was calling Mayweather, and a two-year-old that would have been a nice one next year, I was calling Pacquiao, they're all gone. So I've got Holyfield and like three spikes is all I've seen for the last month and a half. So
they were telling you, you don't live, you have unrealistic expectations or unrealistic hunting property.
Yeah. There was a comment, I can't remember where it was that I read, but they were talking about how, you know, it's unrelatable that I can pass deer like this in my manicured food plots and my special managed properties and such and such and such like that. And I'm like, well, buddy, you obviously don't know the situation, because this, I'm surrounded by half a bajillion hunters, and I am fortunate in that I'm the only person that can hunt this piece, but I don't own it. I'm surrounded by hunters. Everything gets killed every year except for maybe one if I get lucky. So it's better than some places, but it's certainly not as good as others. You just got to make the best of what you have.
Right. And, you know, how big's your food plot?
Half acre.
Okay, so you have a half acre food plot. You know, to me, that's doable. I don't lease any property. I don't own any property. I planted, it was probably a quarter to a half acre food plot of brassicas this year. It was my very first, and I, in total, probably spent $200, maybe $300 on it. I rented the equipment, or I got the equipment to help plant it for free. And as far as like an unrealistic expectation, that should be within almost, I don't know, not everybody's, but if you want it bad enough, you're going to do it. Now, you're not, I don't look at you and say, oh, there's Mark Kenyon. He's a celebrity hunter. He's going to $300, you know, $3,500, $5,000 a week outfitters, you know, to shoot a buck. He's not going out west and hunting private ground for elk or mule deer or whatever. He's not hunting high fence. You know, it's like, that right there is unrealistic. If anything, you are realistic. You're doing what everybody else is doing. We are doing what everybody else is doing. Maybe not from a public land aspect, where you're not hunting on public ground in Michigan or Ohio, and I'm not hunting a lot of public ground, but you're still, like, I would compare myself to the average Joe any day of the week.
Yeah. And I mean, we're certainly way more average Joe than anyone on TV. That's for certain. But
oh, hey, I want to tell you about my high fence hunt that's coming up.
Oh, perfect.
I'm just pulling your leg,
yeah,
Mark.
I know. And I hope I'm not complaining too much. I hope I'm not sounding like I've been complaining this whole episode about like negative feedback, because I put myself up for that because I do this. I know that's expected. It's going to happen. I apologize if I sound like I'm complaining. I'm not. And I appreciate people even paying attention and giving a rip at all, I guess. Right. So, you know, there's that.
Well, there's still some hunting time left. So I don't know. Were we going to talk? We're going to talk about something like
we were
actually related to maybe some deer hunting strategy today, weren't we?
We were, and then I just started ranting, and we've ended up down this weird corkscrew.
I've kind of fed you.
Yeah, you're a bad influence. I did want to talk strategy a bit, but while we're transitioning here, let's take a quick second and take a break to thank our partners at Redneck Blinds for their support of this podcast too. And today we've got a quick story from hunter Jimmy Seitz about how Redneck's hay bale blinds have been helping him on his own hunts.
I've always taught, like in my deer hunting seminars, to hunters, if you go and put a ground blind up, one of these pop-up blinds, no matter what the camo pattern is, you better put it out about 2 weeks in advance, at least a week in advance. Let the deer get used to it. And even then, brush it in. Go cut down some cedar limbs and take some wire and you know, make it, hide it as well as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. Well, then I see the Redneck Bell Blind come along. Danny sent me one. I took it out and used it. I set it up, and 2 hours later, I had deer on me. The same day I set it up, I killed an 8-point buck with my bow out of the blind. Okay.
Wow.
It was mind boggling. And it's because deer in most places where we hunt deer are used to round bills. So unless you're in the middle of the provincial forest, all the way up in Canada where there are no fields within 200 miles, the deer are going to see round bills. They just do. And they don't think a thing about it. I've tested this over and over. Last year I was in Kansas. I was on Del Morel's lease. It's free range. It's about 1800 acres. I'm trying to pattern some deer that I can shoot that are mature. And I take the redneck bell blind out on a Sunday afternoon after church, place it next to a green field. I'm right on the edge of a green field in some high grass. We place it at about 1 o'clock. By 3 o'clock, we have deer on us. I counted 22 deer within shooting range of that blind that afternoon, including a young 10-point buck. None of them were spooked by it.
And I've actually seen similar things myself. In fact, just last week, I had deer 5 feet from me in my hay bale, and they had no clue. Now, as I mentioned in previous episodes, Redneck is offering a great deal for Wired to Hunt listeners through the end of this year, so we're running out of time, but if you use the promo code WIRED, W-I-R-E-D, at checkout on the website for Redneck Blinds, you can get $100 off one of those hay bale blinds, or $50 off their soft side blinds, $20 off their portable hunting chairs or feeders. So check that out over at redneckblinds.com. And now let's get back to the show. You know, I thought two things we could do. You know, for those that are still trying to fill a tag, I thought maybe we could reiterate some of like our best late season philosophies. Because right. I feel like when it comes to late season hunting, every year my thoughts and strategy on that get tighter and tighter. Like, I feel really confident with a few core things that if you haven't heard some of our past late season episodes, that would be something that could be helpful. And then maybe take a few minutes to talk specifically about doe hunting, because that's something we don't talk a lot about, but is worth mentioning. And I get a lot of questions like, you know, if I'm just trying to kill a doe, does the advice that you guys talk about all the time, does that still apply? So I guess let's talk about that first. When you're out there, I'm kind of curious for you, Dan, when you're out there trying to kill a doe, when you're going to a doe hunt, are you hunting differently than when you are out there trying to kill a 4.5-year-old buck?
Absolutely not. I mean, late season, the rule of thumb, find the food, right? That should be the most important thing. Find the food. And here in Iowa right now, we have about, where I'm at, we have about 5 inches, maybe a little bit more, you know, inches of snow on the ground. And that kind of helps me in a way. I can find well-used trails, right? I need to go look for their food source, which is a crop field, which can be, standing corn, standing beans, any field that have gotten picked, and maybe the combine's pretty inefficient. But if you're hunting a specific buck over a specific food source, there's a good chance that you're going to be running into some does as well. So if I'm hunting a buck late season, a specific buck, I'm more than likely going to be running into does as well. So that same kind of motto applies for any deer, really, is find that late season food.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think the only difference is that you can just get away with a little more in that, you know, when we're targeting, let's say, a specific buck, I know that if I go in there and hunt a couple times and spook a deer or leave scent or something, I'm reducing my chances of him showing up later. While I don't need to be as concerned about that when I'm hunting does, because it's likely there's going to be a doe there the first night and the second night and the third night. And as long as I'm not doing something really stupid and spooking all those deer, you're probably going to have them coming in. So I'm just not as selective as with my days. You know, when we talk a lot about picking the right days to hunt, I'm way more selective when it comes to that when I'm targeting a buck. When I'm targeting a doe, almost, especially this time of year, as long as it's not crazy hot, if you've got good late season food, there's a good chance that there's going to be some does coming to that food source in the evening, no matter if the moon's right or if the barometric pressure is right or whatever. So that's one thing. I will say one thing I've noticed is you do still have to be really careful about getting busted by those old matriarch does. because if they catch you in the tree stand once, I've seen many times where these does, the same, I don't know if it's the same doe, but you see the big old mama come into the food plot and will look right at your tree, right there where she saw you last time, to see is that sucker up there again. So you can't get away with too much with the old mother does.
Right.
You still got to be set up well. You still don't want to be walking out of there, you know, through the food source and spooking all the deer out at the end of the hunt, that kind of stuff. But yeah, I agree. For me this year, I mean, if I go out tomorrow night, I'm going to be going to one of these same food plots where all these deer are just, they're just killing it right now. It's those brassicas. Have you been, speaking of, have your brassicas, you did plant brassicas, right?
Right. Now, I haven't hunted my, hunted that property or checked that trail camera yet late season, but after the leaves started to fall, they started to get covered up. And yes, they were eating the brassica leaves, but I think I planted my brassicas too late for my specific area, because I feel that the late, as the sun started getting lower in the sky, you know, at the closer it got to the end of the year. So I planted in late August, September, October. They weren't getting the sun that they needed. And I think I mentioned this before, but I think I overseeded as well. So they didn't grow as big as a brassica probably should have grown by now, or, you know, by October, but they were still visiting the food plot. They were still, bedding in it, coming through it. I tore down a gate, but left the gate posts up, turned one of them into a mock scrape tree. And, they started using that. So it worked. But it's not like it was. It was almost like, hey, I'm going to stop and eat here on my way through. It never became a destination, so to speak.
Right. Which yeah, sounds like a lot of those things could be the case. And because of the size of it being relatively small, it's always going to kind of be a pass-through location. But I'll be interested to see if they're hitting it late season, because, man, almost no other time of year does a food plot help as much as during the late season, when most of the other crops are down. And if you've got the standing food, whether it be standing beans or standing corn or a brassica food plot like this with turnips and rape and kale and all that, holy crap. I mean, they are just in it so hard right now. I would just, like I said, I went to go check my camera, and man, it is just, it looks like a war zone with all the dug up holes and craters where they've been digging out turnips and stuff. And they're there almost all day. They're in there in the morning, they're in there in the middle of the day, they're in there in the evenings. So I'd say the other thing when it comes to late season, both whether it's for does or bucks, is again keeping the pressure low, because especially at this time of year, these deer have been hunted for 2 months or 3 months, so they're especially wary about hunting pressure. And I do think one of the reasons why Holyfield is still so active on my property here is, number one, I've got the good food for this time of year, and number two, I've been so selective with what I hunted since November 8th. Since now and November 8th, I think I've hunted this property 4 times total, maybe 5 times total. Like, I've hardly hunted at all. And I think if I was hunting it a ton, this buck would not be present or as active as he is. So I think that's something that, is something to always keep in mind. So,
one thing I would like to add, late season, and a lot of it depends on how extremely cold the temperatures are, but I've noticed that once these deer find a food source, they will continue to go to this food source until it is gone. Right. So let's say there is I'll use your brassica food plot, for example. They'll go there and continue to go there until it's gone or the snow's off and they can start finding browse elsewhere. But they're going to be bedding really close to that food source, especially if the weather conditions are brutal. They're not going to want to expend any additional energy, you know, walking an additional 500 yards to a different bedding area. They're going to be bedded as close as possible, you know, within reason for their safety. But, you know, it's just going to, and typically that's why you see these deer come out, you know, in these brutal conditions, you know, all day long is because they need that energy to stay warm.
Yeah, that's a huge point that you made. And like that was one of the big learning experiences for me when I started hunting late season more around some of these crop areas. I messed up a few times where when I started hunting this area down here in Michigan for the first time, I was seeing all these deer come out and feeding in this cut cornfield. And I remember once I thought, okay, I'm going to sneak in there and hunt the edge of this cornfield that I never had hunted before. And I went sneaking in there in the late season, and I got to within like 30, 40 yards of the edge of the field, and like 30 deer erupted out of the cover, like 20 yards in off the field, and just blew out of there. And ever since then, I've just known that these deer are bedding, as, like you said, as close as they can safely be to that food. So having an access route in there that takes that into account and thinking about your stand placement is very important. And then the other thing, especially if you're trying to target a buck, again, is you may want to observe a few times before going in, more so than during the rut. I mean, during the rut, you can get in there and stuff's going to happen. But at this time of year, and again, you screw it up a couple times, the big boy's probably not going to show up. So sit away from where you think's good the first time or two or whatever, if you have the available time, and watch and figure out specifically, okay, this is where they're coming from. This is where they're entering. This is the wind they're using. And then, you know, like we always say, we say it 1,000 times, but, you know, drone strike it. Figure out the specifics and then strike when you know as best as possible what the situation is. And that's super important this time of year.
And late season, if there's snow on the ground and you found a food source, it's going to be very easy to find where these deer are coming because there's highways leading to the food source. If you have standing crops or if you have, you know, any type of ag field that's been picked, you're going to see the trails in the snow. So it's almost a no-brainer, especially if you're just going to set up maybe an observation stand for that first hunt. Walk in to the very first trail that is heavily used, set up within, you know, make sure your wind's right. But that's your first observation stand. Nothing comes down there during daylight. Bump to the next one that's entering this food source.
Yeah.
So
I love snow at this time of year. I mean, having snow out there makes it so much, I don't know if it's easier, but I guess, I mean, it's just, it you get to see something that you usually wouldn't see. And I love just kind of scoping out my property this time of year, and you just see the travel corridors just black and white. It's so easy now to see where these deer consistently travel. And like, for example, on this Michigan property that I've been hunting so much, you know, I've gotten to know where these corridors are, but it's cool to see it written out in the snow, confirming what I've seen historically. Well, yeah, they're doing the same thing today, and that's kind of cool to see.
And don't shoot a shed buck. My stepdad, during first season shotgun this year, found a shed antler, and there's pictures already of guys out there who are getting trail camera pictures of shed bucks. So if you're out to kill a doe and a doe only, be very observant about what you're shooting.
Yeah, that's a good point. I've seen the same thing, people posting those pictures, and that would be a serious bummer to accidentally shoot, especially if it's a buck you've been after for a long time, to accidentally shoot him after he sheds. Right. That would be a worst case scenario, no doubt about that. So is it your daughter that's hooting and hollering back there, or is it one of the kids that your wife's babysitting?
Man, I don't know. Could be one of them.
How do you handle all these children all over the place?
I crawl into a hole. Like, I have podcasts. I try to do as many podcasts as I can within a week, so I don't have to deal with that until like the parents come home. Then I can kind of sneak out, poke my head out. I got my office upstairs now, so I what are you doing? Can you help me out here? No, I got a podcast. I gotta do, and it's just me with my headphones on looking at a blank computer screen, so sometimes I just fake it.
That's good. How's the new office coming?
It's pretty good. I got my sheds up here. I don't have them hung yet, but I'm trying to figure out where I'm going to put my desk, whether I'm going to put it in the closet and turn it into kind of like a recording studio for the podcast. And then I hang my mounts up in different spots. I haven't really made that decision yet, but
so would the closet include soundproofing?
Yep.
That sounds like a good idea.
I know. And it might. It all also might be a secret hideout too.
Yeah.
Where I go in and disappear for a little while, but yeah.
What were you saying a second ago? I interrupted you. You were about to mention something.
I was gonna. My daughter, she's in that. I don't know. She finds pooping interesting now, so she she announces to everybody that she poops. So
awesome.
We were walking. Yeah, we were in Target the other day, and the lady goes, "How are you doing? You know, we're checking out. Would you like a sticker?" "Yes, I would like a sticker. I pooped in the big girl potty today."
like father, like daughter.
Right. So just imagine if that continued on throughout our life. So it was like, would you like paper or plastic? I would like plastic because I pooped in the big boy potty today.
Oh, kids.
Yeah. It's my life is a circus. It's hilarious. Like my son, he's starting to get these. He's going to be a comedian. I swear to God, he's making all these funny facial expressions and
already
like, yeah, just like when he walks into the room, he kind of has his shoulders back and his head up and he does this little waddle and this big old cheeser grin on his face. And it's pretty cool to see but when they're sleep deprived, they both turn into a-holes. And then that's when it really gets interesting.
Yeah, I imagine.
I can't wait till you have a kid and, you know, it's like how bad can being a parent really be? And then you have these thoughts in your head like, I wonder how much I could get for them if I sell them. Wait, I can't. I'm not supposed to think about that. I'm a loving father. I should never think about selling my children. But then you actually have that random thought come through your head, you know, when one of them's covered in their own feces. Well, it could be their own feces. And the other one's, you know, been crying for 15 minutes because you gave her a blue cup and not the pink cup. You know, that kind of stuff.
Man, I'll tell you what, I don't know what I'm gonna do. Get a vasectomy.
Focus on your blog for the rest of your life. If you want kids, go to your in-laws and you know your wife's sister or whatever.
Uh huh.
Play with them, get their fix, then go hunting. And you know, if you want to pass on the hunting tradition to someone, and volunteer at a school. At the same time, I love my kids and I love my family, but let's be realistic. Kids can be a-holes. I'm just going to leave it right there.
I love
my kids.
Could be our closing thoughts there. We got a good balance here, Dan, because I know there's people that listen to me talk about what I do and they just shake their heads and they're like, that guy's a jerk. He doesn't have kids. He has no idea. And then they get to hear you and they're like, someone can relate. So,
you know, then you got the other guys. Why is Dan even on the show? All he does is bitch about his kids all the time.
That's true. So we've got a couple people in each of our corner, I bet. So,
right.
Well, I think that's probably a good place for us to wrap it up, Dan. Anything else? Anything else we should leave things with here?
I don't think so, man. Good luck. You know, to all the listeners, good luck late season. Hopefully you get what you're going after. And yeah.
I think that's a good idea. Good luck to those out there. And then shoot, before we know it, we're going to have one more episode this year. And then it's 2017 and we're going to be starting the whole cycle all over again and dreaming about what's going to happen next year and shed hunting and scouting and all sorts of crazy stuff. Can you believe that?
Man, my season's not over yet. I honestly don't want to think about that yet because, like, I'm going on an elk hunt in Colorado next year. So I'm thinking about that a little bit, but I don't want this season to be over yet because I've spent so little time in a tree this year.
Yeah, since your rut kill on November 3rd, how many times have you got to hunt? Or should we not make that public?
Zero.
What?
I have not been in a tree stand since the night I killed my buck.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea. I thought that you were still heading out, you know, shoot a doe, or you told me that you were still going to go out there and maybe try to shoot a second buck.
Yep, I got until January 9th is when I leave to go to the ATA show. So between now and then, and temperatures are supposed to be in the mid in the mid-30s to low 40s for the next 15 days. So yeah,
you missed the window. This is this last week or two has been the great late season weather.
Right. Not bow season yet.
Why haven't we been talking about this?
I don't know. I don't want to talk about it. I'm depressed. And plus I have to go mail some packages for my wife. So we have to end the podcast now.
All right. Well, maybe next week we'll talk about Dan's late season strategy. How about that? Oh, but Dan, didn't we want to talk about the Nine Finger Chronicles real quick before we go?
Yeah, sure. Well, the Nine Finger Chronicles, in a way, is kind of like an extension of the Wired to Hunt podcast. I mean, on the Wired to Hunt podcast, we talk a lot about strategy and actually how to kill the big deer. But I was getting a lot of emails from guys asking me about products, and it kind of lit a fire in my head. You know, no one is out there doing a bow hunting podcast on actual products. So I had this idea to start the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, and it revolves around product, gear, and information. So, you know, we have a lot of people come on the show. For example, we had an engineer from Bear Archery come on the show and talk about the products, the product design, the innovation, the company history, and everything that kind of goes into the actual product. It's not some celebrity, or it's not somebody who's getting paid to rep the product. The information is coming right from the horse's mouth. And then we have product reviews, where I have Average Joes come on the show and they talk about their experience with certain products. And it's a completely unbiased opinion of these products. You know, these guys aren't repping the product. They're not getting paid to rep the product. So in a way, it's information, useful information to my listeners about all these different random products that are in the bow hunting industry, I guess you could say. And we cover everything from trail cameras to, bows, tree stands, everything, broadheads, arrows, everything that a bow hunter needs. We cover it. And then the second part of the podcast is the hunter profiles, which in the BS sessions that I do is what I call them. And it's basically average Joes who have had successful hunting seasons. And I'm not talking about, you know, big bucks. In order to be on the podcast, you have to kill a big buck. I mean, these are people who define success in their own ways. So, you know, a lot of it revolves around bow hunting. So we talk about the properties that they hunt, whether it's public or private. We talk about, you know, the history they've had with this deer, the setups. You know, it's basically a story of an individual's hunting season, or hunting two or three seasons, or an actual profile of a buck that they've hunted for a certain number of years. And the BS sessions are just that, two guys BSing about bow hunting. So it's just something that I love to talk about, and I figured, hell, why not start a podcast?
Where'd you get that idea from? No, I'm just kidding. No, so you started Nine Finger Chronicles in addition to your help over here. You started that like last fall, I think, or last winter. So it's been about a year. And one of the things I always wondered, especially when you were just getting started out, was when you're having these guys on from these different companies, they work for this company, this brand. Yeah. I always wondered how much of the time they're blowing smoke up your butt. You know, they're hyping their product and they're saying all these big things. How much do you think that happens? And then have you ever had to challenge someone because you just know it's BS what they're saying? Have you ever had to be like kind of call them out? Like, are you sure your product can really do that?
Yeah. In a way, yeah. I'm not going to ask them straight out. If they're telling me that their product's going to do something, then, you know, I'm not the person who wants to make the decision on that product or call them out on it. That's the job of the listeners. I'm basically a conduit for information from that company to the listeners' ears. And yes, I've had to play devil's advocate a few times on some of these companies who their claim may be a little bit, I guess, louder. You know, they're pounding their chest a little bit louder than maybe what they should. Right. I'm not going to try to knock them down, but I will question it because it deserves to be questioned, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. And I guess that's probably partly where your kind of listener reviews come in too, because the people that heard these things can then go try the products and come back to you and tell you what they actually thought about some of this stuff, which is kind of cool.
Right. And the cool thing about it is it's all walks of life. Guys and even gals, all walks of life who come on the podcast and chat, and you're getting product information from the people who actually spend the money to purchase it and who are using them on, you know, a daily basis throughout the hunting season. So, you know, when me and you look for products that we're going to purchase, we're looking at reviews, you know, we're looking at the people who are satisfied or unsatisfied with them on a yearly basis and basically see what they have to say.
It's awesome. That's definitely, I mean, it's the kind of stuff that we want when we're shopping, is getting a real unbiased review from people that are super serious, just like we are. So, the one thing I'm curious about is, have you ever had someone on your show that's as weird as me?
Dude, you're not weird. You're not weird.
You're saying there's weirder?
There's weirder people out there. There's weirder people. But and I feel that I'm weird.
Well, yeah, you are.
I'm very weird. So I think that's why that all works.
You're right.
And that's why this works, you know, me and you. So
it's very true. It's very true. Well, hey man, I think that's awesome. I'm so glad that, you know, the podcast is doing well and that you're having fun with it and finding it valuable, and that's awesome. That have we hit the 1 year mark?
Yep. October of 2016 was the 1 year mark. I've broken my 100 episode mark, so I'm pretty happy with the way everything's going, and from the feedback I get from the listeners, they're happy with it too. So it's just kind of a blessing. And I know you joked about it earlier, but it's a lot of this is kind of an offspring of the Wired to Hunt podcast. I mean, you kind of motivated me to start this, and I think it's just an extension of what, you know, we as hunters talk about on the Wired to Hunt podcast. So I owe you a thank you as well.
Not a problem at all, dude. I'm excited for you. Excited it's going well. And so if you haven't checked out Nine Finger Chronicles yet, which I think a lot of you probably have, but if you haven't yet, search it out on iTunes or your website. And what's the URL again, Dan?
Ninefingerchronicles.com, all spelled out.
Perfect. All right, man. Well, now we really are going to shut it down and go return that package or whatever it was you're supposed to do for your wife.
That's right. I think I'm going to be late, but hey,
story of your life. Okay, well, that is going to be it for us today. So we just need to thank our partners who do help us keep this show on the air. Thank you to Sitka Gear, Redneck Blinds, Huntera Maps, Yeti Coolers, Ozonix, Carbon Express, Maven Optics, and the Whitetail Institute of North America. And of course, thank you all for listening today. I hope you have a very Merry Christmas and a happy holiday season. And until next time, stay wired to hunt. Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. You simply pour a can into your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. So pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more.
I'm sure a lot of you guys remember the old ceremonial hunting tradition of eating the heart out of the first animal you kill. Meat from those organs are among the most nutrient-rich foods on the planet. You can get those same benefits your ancestors craved via convenient daily capsules from Heart and Soil. Find out more at heartandsoil.co. And remember, use code MEATEATER for 10% off your purchase.